season, the Phoenix Suns won 25 games. We jokingly mention this a lot on the podcast in terms of how we caught up with them, but we started doing the podcast basically in, I believe, January, something like that. So episode 26, we've now eclipsed them. We have more podcasts, and I don't know how many of them are wins. We're probably like 13 and 13 at this point, but right now we're actually going to roll on with the podcast here, episode 26 here on Bright Side of the Sun, the podcast here that we do on the Phoenix Suns. But we got a little bit of a twist. We have a special guest host, and you may actually know him from a lot of his work he does here in the Valley, running the Sports Cave with a K, jumping on and running his own show every Tuesday at 9 p.m. local time on 1100 KNFX. PLR, Paul Richardson, the Sports Cave, the man with the knowledge of basketball and vast sports knowledge around the Valley. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? I gonna make it hard for me to live up to all those compliments.
Yeah, and you know what? The one thing I didn't throw out there was PLR, the proud registered member of the Chicago Blackhawks fan club. I know how much you love hockey, and the fact that your team is in the Stanley Cup, you got to be excited for that a little bit. I'm gonna throw you a couple. I'm gonna give you like 30 seconds to talk hockey, because I know that me and you both know we talk enough hockey on another fellow friend of ours radio show.
Ain't that the truth? Listen, you know what? I'm a Blackhawk fan because I believe I'm all Chicago except when it comes to the Cubs. But it's amazing. I actually found myself watching two of the games and actually getting into it, but I think it's because it's the hometown team. But this is two of the original six. I don't think that's happened since like 1978, 79, which is a stat that I don't even know why I know. But it should be a good series, and I'm actually going to watch this game tonight. So go Blackhawks. Let's see what they got.
Whoa, you're going to watch the game tonight. So you need to call Dave, Dave Isaacs and Greg Isaac. That's the radio show we talk about. They spend a copious amount of time talking about hockey, even if an NBA lockout or an NFL lockout's going on. You guys know we love you, but you know we talk about that all the time, how you guys love your hockey. So, you know, it's cool that the Blackhawks are there, and the fact that you're a fan of them, because I have no idea any players on the Blackhawks, or I believe it's the Boston team. It's also shows you how much hockey I know and watch. But I'll tell you one thing that both of us watch, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, the NBA Finals. And you know what? Game one, barn burner, game-winning shot for the ages. And then games two and three, regardless of the outcome of the final score, they were both blowouts. We both agree. This is edge-of-your-seat TV. This is must-watch TV. This is a prize fight. This is boxing in the 1960s and 70s. This is two absolutely great teams. I don't know the last time I was watching the NBA Finals and thought, these are two great teams that if either team wins, I don't care if it's a sweep, they're all going to be good games. Or if it goes seven, I don't care who wins. I just want to see seven basketball games.
You know what? You said something that's quite interesting. When was the last time you were entertained in a blowout? I mean, usually you watch a game, and once the blowout starts, you usually turn away. Well, game two, you couldn't turn away because Miami got the machine rolling. They were going up and down the court. It was like one highlight move after the next highlight move. It was late enough in the game, so they weren't the first half blowouts that make you kind of bored and you step away. It came late, so you actually rode the wave all the way through. Same thing last night. You couldn't take your eyes off watching Danny Green and Gary Neal shoot the ball. You just couldn't. You couldn't stop watching it. It was crazy to be entertained in a blowout.
Yeah, and that's really interesting that you point that out, because if you would have turned that game off when the Heat were up by 19 at like late in the third quarter, early fourth quarter, you would have missed the LeBron block for the ages, right? If you would have turned off the finals last night, you would have missed the three-point barrage that continued once they got up by 20. I mean, they pushed the lead up to, I believe at its peak was 31 or 33 points, and that's because you still got to run offense. You can't just call the game and say, all right, guys, you know, you win, you know, hats off to you. You got to finish the game out. And sometimes, you know, in the midst of the shot clock going on, three-point shots are available, and the Spurs kept knocking them down and knocking them down. Gary Neal, Danny Green, two guys that one is a second-round pick, one's undrafted. You know, one went to Towson, one went to North Carolina, one went to Europe, and one rode the bench for the Cavaliers and finally found his way to the Spurs. Two guys that you would have never expected to do what they did, and they did it. And I'm just going to ask this question because everyone's asking it. Just a quick answer for you because I don't want to spend too much time on it. Is Danny Green the NBA Finals MVP at this point?
As of right now, he has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, the NBA, we all know, they want the name to be the MVP. But this is the one time where you got to just let the MVP be the MVP. Now, I would probably bet you a dozen of donuts plus one that somehow by the time it's all said and done, it'll end up being Tim Duncan because this might be his last one. But if you go off of who should get it, you got to go with Danny Green.
Yeah, it's I mean, Game 4 is going to change a lot of things. I think we both agree that Miami is going to come out. I mean, this series has been all about counterpunches. And the Spurs, you know, they had this just happen to them a few days ago. They got shellacked by 20-plus points, and then they turned around and did this. So it's all about counterpunches. It's all about the chess game that you're playing. And the interesting thing that I'm watching on here is that, and I talked about this a little bit on the draft podcast, if you guys are, you know, wanting to know more about the NBA draft, jump on NBADraftInsider.com. Had a podcast that went up today where kind of talked a little bit about this, where the Spurs are a team, nine of their players were drafted by them. I believe two or three, I don't have the list in front of me, I'm going to pull it up as we're talking, two or three of them are undrafted, and they only have one lottery pick on their entire roster. And when you look at that team, that's basically a homegrown team, that's a home-drafted team. You know, it started off by getting Duncan, they got extremely lucky, slash they were smarter than everybody with Parker and Ginobili, but that team, you know, they got their stars first and they built the role players around them, and they got the guys that, you know, maybe bad teams can't find, or when they have them they don't know how to use them. But that's what the Suns got to start doing, right? I mean, they either need to start getting better players, better role players, and hope a star finally falls their way, or they need to find that star to make all the role players that they have look as, I mean, do you feel that the current Suns roster, that they have role players that could, you know, win playoff series if they had a Duncan and a Parker, or a, you know, LeBron and a Bosch? Do you feel like this roster could win playoff games if they just added a superstar?
You know what? That's a tough question, and I'll say why. Just because I was kind of half-heartedly joking with you the other day when we were down at the pre-draft camp. I think it was day six or day five or something of that nature. But I said the team really has Goran Dragic and 14 other players. I do like, it's hard for me to discount someone like the Shannon Brown, who was a role player on a team that won a title. So he already shown that he could play with stars and contribute. But I worry about some of the other players. I really do. To be honest with you, outside of him or Gortat, obviously Goran is going to be the face of the franchise. So I guess technically to answer the question, yes. But when I'm struggling to come up with more than three names out of a 15-man roster, I don't think that's a great percentage.
Yeah, because I look at the roster and I go, I think Goran could be a great sixth man, or I think he could be a good starting point guard if he's the third or fourth best, or I should say the fifth or fourth best starter on the roster. So I do think that Goran in that capacity could be, you know, a really good player. I think that Jared Dudley would be great as a sixth or seventh man, or the fourth or fifth best starter. Same with Marcin Gortat. Same category I'd give to all of those guys. And it just feels like if they found the superstar, and I'm not saying that you go to the bucket and you pull one out and it's that easy, but if they were able to get themselves a transcendent player, a leader, a guy that can lead. I mean, even the Indiana Pacers with the number 10 pick drafted a guy that everyone was unassuming with Paul George. It took a couple of years, and then he's developed each year into what, I mean, presumably would be a superstar here in the upcoming years. I mean, we got to wait and see. And guys like Steph Curry, I mean, he probably could have gone a little higher in the draft, but he fell to right about where his range should be. He's developed into a star. So now that the Suns aren't drafting 13th for the 42nd straight year, it feels like, now that they're actually drafting a little bit higher, granted, it's not the greatest draft in the world, but if they can get a guy that they can develop and turn into maybe a Paul George or a Steph Curry type star, maybe not a LeBron James type star, but one of those type of stars, then I think this team could be on the right track. And that's where, you know, seven workouts in 8 days, and, you know, having 45 different guys in the gym to get looks at them, having the 5th, the 30th, and the 57th overall pick, this is where it's got to start. The rebuild begins today as much as the team and the fans wanted it to begin 3 years ago.
You know what, I have a question for you, and I was, I forget who I was talking to about this, but I said the Suns are kind of in a position where they're going to have to do one or two things free agent-wise. They're either going to have to overpay for someone that is a good player, like a really good player, but maybe not a quote-unquote superstar, or they're going to have to put together a cap-friendly trade and bring in someone that, again, will probably make a little bit more than what they want to pay them just to be able to attract someone else. And when I look at this roster, you know, Ryan McDonald said it himself, you know, I believe it was a Jeff Hornacek introduction, there aren't too many superstars that are going to be willing to come to a team that only won 25 games. So you got to think of a way to get them here, and there's only one of two ways. Either you have to trade for them, and generally if you're going to trade for a superstar nowadays, you're taking on a bad contract, or you're going to have to overpay someone just a little bit more than you want to get them to come here. And so, or then there's the draft. And like you said, this draft isn't exactly the strongest draft, but, you know, it's hard to say that because there are guys that, you know, we could say a draft is great and guys end up being role players, and we could say a draft is weak and guys end up actually being really good. But do the Suns fans have the patience to wait the 3 years, to wait for someone, you know, if someone that's on your board, like a Victor Oladipo, do they have the 3 years of patience to get through those 25, 29, 30-win seasons to get to that point? And I don't know how that's going to work out with them, because the one thing about basketball, the other end of everything, is there is a business end, which means there are tickets and there are season tickets and there's, you know, luxury suites. All that stuff has to be sold, and that's not sold on patience. That's sold on wins.
Yeah, and one thing that I noticed is that, and doing this for a couple of years now, is that as quote-unquote media guys like you and I, when you hire a Ryan McDonough and a Jeff Hornacek and you build the staff that they've built, guys like us stand up and applaud, and we write glowing articles, and we look at this going, yeah, we're excited for the team next year. But there's probably about 1% of the fan base that stands up and goes, we got Ryan McDonough, holy cow, sign me up for season tickets. And that 1% is probably a very, very high reach in numbers. I mean, he's not a name that sells tickets. I mean, Hornacek's going to sell a few tickets. You know, maybe we'll get Horny's Bar next to Marley's in downtown, and they'll start creating the allure of Jeff Hornacek as the coach. But those guys don't sell tickets, it's the players. And if you're going to reach on a free agent and spend a lot of money, then even if it's a guy that may or may not be great, I mean, you're talking about like the Andrew Bynums and, you know, the J.R. Smiths and the Josh Smiths of the world this year when you're looking at the free agency class, that's going to be tough. I mean, to sell your franchise on, we're going to give this guy a max or close to max deal, they're not worth it. They're definitely not worth it. They're either injury prone or not as good as their contract. But we need to bring them in here so that way, you know, maybe a free agent a year or two from now can look at this roster and go, oh, they got two young guys from the 13 and 14 draft. They got, you know, a veteran in one of the guys I just mentioned. And, you know, maybe I'll go there and be that missing piece and this team will win a championship. They're getting better. They went 25, then they won 30, then they won 33. Now, I think I can help this team out. That's hard to sell. I mean, that's something that, you know, you like you said, with the patience with not only the fans, but also with the players and the roster and keeping everything all nice in the clubhouse here. When you're losing, it's hard to stay positive. And we saw that with the Suns. They had stretches where they were positive despite losing, but they also had stretches where they were frustrated or where they just didn't understand what was going on. And I think the front office is doing a good job of rectifying that with the guys they brought in. But losing is still losing, and it's hard to keep that mentality of we're just a few years away or a few steps away.
You know what's funny when you say that? When they were losing, when they first started losing, and I mean they lost a lot, and you know I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's the truth. They seemed like they were frustrated with games and how they were playing. But to me, towards the end of the season, there were times where they actually seemed frustrated with each other, and that's when you have to start looking at, okay, we already realistically know next year, if everything works out perfect for them, I mean, everything falls and they don't bring in a free agent, they decide they're going to go through the draft, and you bring in a young kid. Generally, as I'm looking at the mock draft that I'm putting together, most of the kids at the top, they come from winning programs. So now you're going to bring them in to a situation where they're not going to be winning, and around them there may be, if it's the exact same players, you know, one or two off for next year that we're getting frustrated with losing and getting frustrated with the season and each other. How are they then going to mentally adjust to winning 25 games or winning 20 games or 30 games when last year they probably won 30 games at their college? How do you keep that positive atmosphere with them? And I think that's going to be a challenge that the Suns are going to have.
Yeah, and another thing with looking at that is you talked about the losing. So I'm there basically for every home game and kind of checking out the practices and getting a vibe of the team. Under Alvin Gentry, losing was frustrating, but it felt like the team understood that they were why they were losing. Not that they were tanking. They understood that they're not as talented, that they got to tweak the roster around, that their coach has a vision, that, you know, this year, after probably about 20 games, they realized they weren't a playoff team and that they were kind of trending towards, you know, the future and kind of making sure that they were ready for the future. That's the vibe I got from the Alvin Gentry crew. But when Lindsey Hunter took over, you know, they went 12-19. They were one game off of the pace, so it's not like he was god-awful compared to Gentry wins and losses. but the vibe completely changed. I mean, the entire aura of the team, everything about the team went from, okay, we're losing, it's frustrating, but we kind of get it, to we're losing and we have no idea what's going on, whether it's communication from the coaches, from the front office. They did not get it. They didn't understand what was going on. They had zero direction. Guys were getting 10 DNPs and then coming in the first quarter, and then five more DNPs and coming into the fourth quarter of a tied game. It just... That really stood out and resonated with me, is that the guys in the second half of the season, they just had no idea what the direction of the franchise was. And it's going to be up to McDonough and Hornacek and the rest of this group, you know, when they bring everyone together in the summertime, whenever they first get everyone together before training camp, to let them know what the vision is, give them proper expectations. Remember, Lon Babby sold this team on Media Day last year as a team that's going to compete for the playoffs. And I, you know, you can't fault him for doing that. That's a team that he just put together. At its peak, I think they could have probably won about 35 to 40 games, but the fact is their peak never happened for any of their players. I think every single one of their players either played average or below average last year, and that's how you lose, that's how you win 25 games and lose 50-plus games.
You know, it's kind of funny because Lon Babby did sell it like that. What was funny about that whole thing is his general manager, Lance Blanks, sold it the opposite way when he said, it may get a lot worse before it gets better. And right there should have given everyone a flag that said, this team has no idea which way they're going. Because you have the head guy saying, you know, it's a possible playoff team, and you have, you know, as I like to call it, the general in command saying, it may get worse before it gets better. So it was almost like, what plan are they working here? What plan are they going to go with?
Yeah, and then you have the owner of the team, you know, vying for Goran Dragic to sign him in the offseason. Then you have the general manager drafting Kendall Marshall. Then you bring in Michael Beasley as a beacon of hope, and we all saw what that turned out to be. So, I think that there was a lot of things going wrong there. Like I said, I don't fault Lon Babby for telling everyone this team's going to compete for the playoffs. I mean, what are you going to do at the beginning of the season before season tickets are bought and before any balls have even been bounced competitively? We're going to suck, guys. You know, I'm just letting you know ahead of time. Make sure you write that and put it in the headlines. We're going to suck. You don't say that. You know, no team. The Charlotte Bobcats, I'm sure, told their fan base and their media before the season last year, you know, that they're going to be a better team than they were last year. They're going to try and compete for the playoffs. Maybe not with as much conviction as Lon had, but I think this year the expectations are going to change. I think unless something dramatic happens this offseason, I think they're going to come in with more proper expectations of being a 25 to 35 win team, and, you know, just understanding where they're actually at. And the great thing this year, let's switch gears and talk about the draft a little bit. Again, 45 guys brought in, and other people have said this. I'm not the most clever guy in the room. I'm not, you know, saying this for the first time or breaking news, but I love how people have made the correlation that in the first workout, being talked to about the very first prospect he was asked about, Ryan McDonough said more in 30 seconds than Lance Blank said in 3 years about prospects. And his whole thing was he wanted to be secretive, and he didn't want to tell anybody anything, but it rubbed people the wrong way to the point where they thought he just didn't know anything. And with Ryan McDonough, it's clearly the opposite. He could sit there and talk to you for 45 minutes about literally any prospect that walks through his door. He knows these guys. He was getting ready for a mid-first-round pick with the Boston Celtics, so he was preparing for a pick about 10 picks from where the Suns are at right now. He just has the luxury of bringing in guys that are going to get drafted 10 picks higher than what he was getting ready for. So he's getting ready for the draft. What are you thinking so far, watching the fact that they've had about 45 guys come in? What is your overall vibe on how this process is different from last year?
You know what? The one thing that I think is important is this year, I love the fact that they brought in so many guys, because they really do have a lot of weaknesses. And I like the fact that they're able to, it just seems like they have a plan, and I know this may sound simple, and I may give it, you know, the same type of say it in 30 seconds, but it seems like they have a plan. I mean, you really get the feeling that they know what they're doing, they know the players, they know everything about what's happening and the direction that they want to go. And I know we're talking who, so I'm going to liken it to Kevin Towers of the Diamondbacks. There's not a roster he doesn't know. There's not a AAA team that he doesn't know. There's not some kid pitching, you know, in southern Louisiana that he has not heard of. And I feel the same way this year about the Suns as opposed to last year. Last year kind of felt like they were reaching for something. I mean, when you're – and I promise I'm not turning this into the Lance Blanks, you know, beat-up show, but for on you. But whenever you introduce a player and you're trying to sell that player, you don't introduce him as slow, unathletic. You don't do that. Because now your whole perception of that person, now you're looking for these weaknesses. I just don't see that happening this year. I don't see that. I see them bringing in players, taking a look, taking a good look to see what's out there and see not only who is the best player, but what player will fit the needs that they have. And it's just different. They may win 25 games this year. They may win 30 games this year. But it seems like there's a plan to get better. And last year, when you have, like you said, the owner saying one thing, the president of basketball operations saying one thing, your GM saying one thing, and your coach obviously looking like there's something else, that's not a good sign. And you don't get that feeling this year. You get the feeling everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, and one thing that I want to throw this out there, this is for editorial purposes for everybody out there listening. Again, we're not piling on Lance Blanks. The team had one pick last year. They had the 13th pick. And if they weren't secretive, you would have known the stuff that I know, which is that they basically did the same process. They brought in a handful of group workouts. They brought in, but only targets for the 13th pick and then guys basically for them to work out against. So, like, if they're bringing in Kendall Marshall, maybe they're bringing in a Division II guy who is an elite defender to have him work out against him, or bringing in a late second-round guy because he's going to work his tail off and have him work out against, you know, Kendall Marshall, and bring in Iman Shumpert and bring in all those guys. So that, you know, that was with the Markieff Morris draft, but you get what I'm saying is that
right.
they were just bringing in guys that would fit them at 13 and maybe a place where they thought they potentially could trade in, maybe around the late first round. So they basically did the same thing. I talked to the Suns guys that are holdovers, and they said that it's the same process. I mean, they brought in a lot of guys, but comparatively not as many because the Suns are dealing with the 5th, the 30th, and the 57th pick this year.
Right.
And they, you know, they need to scope things. They need to know. They get to pick at the beginning, the middle, and the end, essentially. So, you know, they're getting to scope the entire draft. But the one thing that you did say there is that Ryan McDonough is a guy that has a notorious reputation of just flying from gym to gym and having an index on, I don't know if it's on his iPad or written, I don't know, you know, what his technology favor is, but he's a guy that has profiles and names and skill sets and stuff written down on every single player he's seen, and he's flown from Istanbul to Idaho to New York to California. The guy knows talent all across the seas, and he was basically just a grunt worker for the Celtics and then got all the way up to the assistant GM role and just continued being a grunt worker. And if your general manager is flying out to Tel Aviv to watch the Euro Championships, or flying out to Portland to see the Hoop Summit, flying out to, you know, the McDonald's game, flying out to Portsmouth, those are the kind of things that you want out of your general manager. And to be honest with you, I was in Portland for the Nike Hoop Summit, an event where 29 general managers were. You can, you know, wink, wink, pat, you can understand who I'm saying wasn't there. There was 29 general managers there, and there wasn't one. And that general manager doesn't have a job today, and an assistant general manager who was with the Celtics now does have a general manager job today. He was there just kind of standing in the background with a notebook, watching guys quietly and just, you know, getting a feel for those guys at the Hoop Summit, and that was Ryan McDonough. And I thought that was really interesting when I saw him walk through the door, didn't really talk to anybody, did his thing, walked out the door, and I'm sure he ended up with more notes and more thoughts than guys that were sitting there bantering with each other and the guys that didn't show up.
No, I agree, and that's what I'm saying. It's just obvious that the vibe is different. You know, you just get a different feel. And wins and expectations on the winning side, they're probably the same. I mean, realistically, unless someone that they have no expectations of coming here, Dwight Howard, since I can't get fined for tampering, decides to walk through the door, then you expect 25, 30 wins. But the feel is different. It's and sometimes it's like that just because it's new. I mean, we're not new to this. Sometimes just because something is new, you feel different, you feel better about it. But this just seems different than last year. You just can sense that. Yeah, you know what? We may win 25, but I bet you next year is 30. Yeah, I bet you next year is 40. And you can just see it start to turn. And it's the little things that turn. It's not necessarily the big over the top things from the management side. You can just see certain things start to happen.
Yeah, and you definitely are starting to get that vibe with the Suns franchise, which is a positive thing because, I mean, let's be honest, over the past 3 years, give or take, it's been a progressive downward slide. And, you know, if the team was preemptive 3 years ago, they could have, you know, maybe traded Steve Nash for an asset. They could have probably traded Grant Hill for an asset. They could have probably revamped the roster and started with the 2010 draft. But, I mean, I understand the logic also of, I do, but I don't. The idea of letting the ship run its course is something that, let's put it this way, Manu Ginobili is on the last year of his contract with the San Antonio Spurs. If he goes into the offseason and physically doesn't look like the Manu that we're used to seeing, you know, and here in the finals as well, if they start to get the feeling that this guy is not going to be playing basketball for very much longer, they'll cut ties with him. And he's a San Antonio Spurs legend at this point. He's a guy that's been with the franchise for 10 years, and he's won championships, and he's been a linchpin in that team winning championships. They'll let him go. That, you know, like the Patriots cut guys, the Steelers cut guys. Teams with franchise models that win and win championships, they know how to let guys go before they're going to, you know, hit the wall. And the Phoenix Suns, you know, as much as the fans love Steve Nash, I think they would have been okay letting him go if he would have went to a championship contending type team. I think they would have been okay with letting Grant Hill go, because then you let them go a year or two before they're going to hit their wall, and then you bring in assets and you start building. And then once those guys hit their wall, all of a sudden you're, you know, building yourself back up and you're in contention again. So that's the kind of stuff that the Suns didn't see 2 years ago. They're starting to see now, and it looks like they're, I think things are trending in the right direction. We've talked about this before. I think they're 2 to 3, at the worst 2 to 4 years away from being able to say, I think we have a roster that can contend for the 8th seed in the playoffs. We may not make it, but I think that we're starting to get there.
You know, the one thing, and I think in fairness to the Suns too, though, when you talk about teams like Pittsburgh or San Antonio, they still always had another guy. So let's say Manu hangs it up after this year. You still got Parker hanging around. Duncan, you know, but who knows? I mean, he still looks great. He still plays great. If they win it this year, who knows? Maybe him and Pop both walk off with that fifth ring. But the one thing I think the Suns did, I think they thought business, too, when it came to Steve Nash. Yes, they probably should have made that move, and I thought they should have traded him back in 10 as well, because then they really could have gotten something for him. But I think in the back of their mind, the thought was, he is our only ticket seller. I mean, if we let him go, we don't have a ticket seller. And that's where I think the business aspect, and this isn't a shot at Sarver if it's taken that way, I don't think he was ready to give up the golden goose that was laying that dollar egg for him, you know, 3 years ago. I think he still liked the fact that you could market Nash, you could constantly make money off of Nash. And if you let him go 3 years ago, you didn't have anyone else, especially after Stoudemire went to New York.
Yeah, and you know, that concept has obviously got to be taken into consideration, because, you know, money at the end of the day is why a lot of these guys are in this business. They're here to win, but they also like to, you know, make some money along the way. You can't just, you know, not make money and continue running a team. So everyone understands that side of it, and I think, like I said, now they're trending in the right direction. That's all past stuff. Let's look a little bit in the future, and if you've been on my draft site, NBADraftInsider.com, if you've seen the work that I put up on Brightside with all the workouts, you know who I'm, I guess, more in favor of, or you know what I'm hearing in terms of who's going to go 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then the Suns are on the clock. You, PLR, put your GM hat on. Who do you feel the Suns should take, and who do you think the Suns will end up actually taking, if that's different? So two different sides of the coin. You as the GM, who they should take, and then who they're probably going to end up taking based on what you think is going to happen.
You know what? I have three names. I think that if somehow a miracle happens and Ben McLemore slips to him, I think that's who they would take. Reality, I think he'll be gone, so I think it will end up being Victor Oladipo. The person I would like to see them take, and it's kind of funny because we've been talking about this, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I look at the roster, I'm really starting to like Shabazz Muhammad at that spot. I know that you know what his weaknesses are. I know what his limitations are. He's not the best dribbler. He's not the best at that, but he can get to the rim on fast breaks. He can hit jump shots. He can shoot. And I think that if he has the work ethic to really put in the effort, get in the gym, become a gym rat, I think he could probably be one of the really true bright spots. I like his size at 6'6". There's something about him. I just think his game didn't translate to college the way everyone thought it would. But I think it's a great fit for the NBA if he's willing to continue to put the work in and do that. And I think I told you yesterday, he reminds me, not playing or anything of that nature, but of a Rudy Gay type whose game just didn't translate at Connecticut the right way. But as soon as he got to the pros, his game translated. And that just kind of reminds me of what Shabazz Muhammad can be.
Yeah, and you know what, Brightside readers, you hear that? Somebody is on your side, because I'll tell you right now, man, everybody on the Brightside comment boards, everybody reading the site, it's all, we want either Ben McLemore or Victor Oladipo, one of the two, and it's always a debate. You bring up one, and they debate with each other on them. Or they want Shabazz Muhammad, and they're starting to trend a little bit towards wanting Cody Zeller. So you just mentioned two of the guys, three of the guys that they want to see on this roster. You didn't mention Cody Zeller, but we actually talked about him a little bit the other day. So it's, yeah, I mean, you know what? If they get a wing, that's the sexy fan pick. And I completely understand people wanting them to get a wing, a guy that can score, because, man, that team could not score to save their lives sometimes, which leads to 57 losses. But for substance purposes only, for, you know, you get that sexy appeal, but sometimes you just need substance. You just need that quality. And the five position just screams that they need to do something about it, whether it's this year in the draft, whether it's free agency, whether it's a trade, whether it's next year in the draft, who knows. But Marcin Gortat's a 29-year-old center who's played a ton of basketball. He's going into the last year of his contract. Jermaine O'Neal, Hamed Haddadi, Markieff Morris, none of those guys are the answer at the five long term. So I trend a little bit towards five, but hey, you know what? If the Magic take Trey Burke, if, you know, someone reaches and grabs Anthony Bennett and the Suns are on the clock and you have Victor Oladipo and Ben McLemore and, you know, Alex Len and Shabazz Muhammad, Cody Zeller, all those guys are on the board and the Suns are picking, I think that they're as happy as you can be. But then again, they're on the clock and they got to figure out which one of those guys they like the most, which I'm sure they will by then. I think at that point that would be exciting. And then, you know, going for a wing brings that sells the tickets, like you said. I think going big, just my opinion, getting a guy like Alex Len, I think that is something that makes you in a position to be the Memphis Grizzlies, the San Antonio Spurs, the Indiana Pacers of this year, where they were all anchored by a big guy in the paint and made it to the Final Four of the NBA and all had a chance to win a championship. I'm not saying Alex Len is as good or better than any of those guys, but I think in a couple of years he has a chance to be one of the better big guys and maybe even the best player in this draft.
Let me answer this question, because when I look around at big men in the NBA, and you actually had me thinking about this, and for whatever reason I did not look it up, but two of the better centers in the NBA right now were not number one, number two, number three picks. Mm-hmm. I am completely sold on Nikolai Vukovic down in Orlando, yeah, and Nikola Pekovic up in Minnesota. Is there, when I look through the draft, is there a kid out there, and I'm going to throw a couple names at you, because I'm going to tell everyone that's heard this podcast and has heard you talk on any other radio show around the valley, you probably know, like, the 17-year phenom in Istanbul yourself. But what about some of the young kids, like a Marco Todorovic out of Barcelona, or one of the other big European kids that can turn into a Pekovic? Because right now, you may say, I mean, it's I'm not sure, it's still kind of early, and no, I haven't been on anything, but I would right now take a Nikola Pekovic or a Vucevic over some of the other more marquee name centers in the NBA, because they do have the fundamentals, they can shoot mid-range jump shots in like a Pekovic, and they can also kill you and just board you all night long. And I think that you may not have to go to number five to find that guy if you can find that guy in Europe.
Yeah, no, you know, and that is a philosophy that is the other side of the coin, right? So I say, you know, go big at five if all the perimeter guys are gone. So that's my philosophy on it, is McLemore and Oladipo are off the board, Porter's off the board, and do you reach up for Shabazz Muhammad to sell tickets and score points on the perimeter, or do you go big? Because I think that's really their option at that point, unless they want to go with one of the point guards, because they have worked them out exhaustively and then, you know, go in a different direction with the point guard position for the future. But so at the number 30 pick, that's where things get interesting. I don't necessarily know if you're going to get someone at 57. I mean, you can just draft a draft and stash player and leave him in Europe and, you know, see if he develops, like a Dejan Mousley. You can draft a guy like that. You can get a guy like Walter Tavares, who's huge. I think he's got about 7'2", 7'3" guy. You know, basically built in the mold of that Roy Hibbert, Marc Gasol, big lumbering guy that just stands in the paint but has enough mobility to kind of trick you and be very effective. So you can go for one of those guys at 57 probably and draft and stash them. Or you can go with a guy like Lucas Nogueira, Big Bebe over in Brazil. He's a guy that's been on the draft radar for a few years. He's a guy that wouldn't be a reach at 30. I think he'd be a fine pick at 30. And he's a guy that maybe you leave in Europe for a year, or you put in the D League for a year and call him up every now and then. But he's got shot blocking instincts. He's thin as a rail. He needs to add on about 30 pounds before he's going to be able to bang with the big boys. But, you know, he's kind of built like Chris Bosh, but he's 7 foot. And I think he's a guy that maybe if you go perimeter and then you're targeting a guy like him at 30, that makes a lot of sense. So that is the other side of the coin with my argument, and I love having hearing the other side and being able to go back and forth with intelligent basketball talk. So, yeah, if you go perimeter there, then you can reach for a guy like that at 30, or you know maybe at that point you go with a different position to fill a need, maybe add some shooting or add some athleticism to the roster. But I don't think at 57 you're going to get necessarily that guy, but I don't think people thought that Mark Gasol and people thought that Nikola Pekovic and all those guys were going to turn into top five, top six centers in the NBA a couple of years into their career. You know, they end up developing into that. So there might be that guy at 57. I would lean towards maybe like a Lucas Nogueira at number 30 and going with him and hoping that he develops into that if you go perimeter at number five.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the only thing with bigs, and that's why I was following you with that, and I was like, but, you know, the last thing I would like to see them doing, and again, maybe I'm thinking too much on the business side of it, if you get a big man that you're waiting for to develop a year or two or, you know, down the line, that's one thing. If you're getting him later, but at number five and winning 25 games, I think you have to get someone who's going to make an impact. Now, when you talked about guards, I'll be honest with you, if the Suns draft another guard early, I don't think that's a good sale. And again, I'm thinking from the business end, because I know that you have it. I mean, there's no one better than you, especially on the player development end, but I just, I'm just worried about that. I mean, you already have, like you said, the Suns signed, you know, they signed a guard last year, then you turn around and you draft a guard last year, and now you're going to, if you get another guard this year, someone is going to be obviously left out. And we already probably know who that would be, but you got to do something. You can't just have all these guards on your roster that are either free agent signees or draft picks because you have too many other needs. And I just don't think they're necessarily in the position to pick the best there wherever they fall when they have so many other needs.
Yeah, and so you hear it there. If you draft another point guard and someone yells, but we have assets if we draft another point guard, we'll know that asset lose a lot of value when a team looks at you and goes, I'm not going to give you what you want. You have Goran and Kendall Marshall. You're trying to trade this guy, so I don't have to give you what you want because there's no inherent value in that player because you need to get rid of him. I don't need to take him from you, so you take our offer or, you know, go and try and sell this to somebody else. So yeah, that's where you end up running into an issue with the point guard, unless they have a plan in place where they are moving somebody and, you know, bringing in another guard and doing it that way. That's like definitely option 5, 6, 7 or something like that. They got better options at, you know, they have 4 or 5 better options before they even consider point guards, I would imagine, unless they have a master plan that neither of us are privy to. But no, yeah, this was great, PLR, by the way. You know, jumping in, guest hosting, Jim Kochenour, you now have a rival for your seat. I'm just throwing it out there. There's a rival for your seat. And I knew you were paranoid going into this that you were going to have someone, but he talked a little bit of hockey. He had baseball references that I throw out there, even though I don't watch baseball. You hate my baseball analogies and metaphors, and he threw a few out there. So I'm just throwing it out there, Jim. You got some friendly competition. But PLR, before I let you go, tell the readers out there where they can listen to you on the air, where they can listen to you on the internet, your website, Twitters, get it all out there. Where can people find you?
All right, you can find me on Twitter. Actually, I have two Twitters. One is mine. It's PLR on Sports. Please feel free to follow me. I think I have like two followers there because I never tweet from it, but I promised myself I would start. But the main one is at the Sports Cave, and Cave is with the K. Our website is thesportscave.com. There are going to be a lot of articles. In fact, I have my mock draft going up this Monday for the NBA. There's a lot of baseball stuff on there, a lot of football stuff coming up. And then, of course, we are on air every Tuesday night, 1100 KFNX, from 9 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night. In fact, we had Chris on last night talking hoops with us. So please check us out, and appreciate you letting me come on and talk to you this morning.
Hey, you always need a co-pilot. If I was trying to fly out here by myself, I'd probably pull a Denzel Washington in flight. So I just wanted to make sure that I came in and had someone to kind of keep me in check. So, all right, appreciate having you on, PLR, Paul Richardson of the Sports Cave. Jim, you have competition for this co-pilot seat. I'm just saying we're going to evaluate it and hold it to a vote. That's it for this week, episode 26. We'll be back with episode 27 next week, 2 weeks from the NBA draft, ladies and gentlemen. So make sure you're studying up and getting to know these prospects, and we'll be back at you next week.